Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Chokhmah. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, June the 12th, 2018. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
I got it. Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Oh, everything is on go here. We have a local mushroom farm, and we're over by a couple of pounds of mushrooms, and they have their second, which are just awesome. Oyster mushrooms that probably sell for, I don't know, source $12 a pound or something. They gave us probably 150 pounds. What a gift. We're going to have mushroom soup and mushroom powder and all kinds of cool stuff. So things are rocking here, all things moving forward. And we're honored and delighted that you're here. You know, one of the things that we announce at the beginning of every intensive is that everybody that you've never dealt with, we've communicated with personally and invited them to come and be here to be part of the intensive. And they all agreed to show up. Well, guess what? We're in what, day 4 here, I think? Whatever. I haven't been keeping track of it. But we're rocking along, and guess what? Those people are showing up for people. In fact, I was even one of them today. You know, it's so cool how it all works. So awesome, this healing process. And there's just this, last night it was really sweet when the intensive, the evening class, you know, we're doing work projects during the day, which puts everybody into real work mode where all kinds of stuff happens, kitchen, real family mode, all kinds of stuff happens. Well, last night we're simply sharing how, yeah, well, you know, this was coming out for me and somebody pointed it out for me and I got support and I just moved through that layer. It's just so awesome when a group of people comes together like this and is committed to creating a community. And, of course, there's always a chaos phase when creating community. People come in, and they're on their nicest behavior and all of that. And then, all of a sudden, the hidden stuff starts to surface. And you've heard me say before, and one of the things I like to talk about is that, you know, if there's not an enemy nearby when it starts to come up to put it on, you can take your most cherished friend, your spouse, your child, your parent, your most cherished, and you can make it what's going on in your mind all about them. They're doing your own intensive. It's called life. You know, the purpose of life is to kick you in the limitation. If it's showing you anything in you that's based in hostility or fear. Now, of course, you got to be able to tell whether or not it's your hostility or fear. So we've got to test in this work to determine, whether or not the hostility or fear that you're experiencing is yours or not. And, you know, this is a really challenging test to apply, but with a little bit of practice, you can do it. How do you tell whether or not when you're feeling hostility or fear, it's yours or somebody else's? Here's how you tell. Are you feeling it? If you're feeling it, then you know that it's about you and that it's yours. And the hostility and fear are the energetic frequencies that create death. Death does not happen naturally. We are made for health and aliveness. Disease is not a natural condition. Now, we live in a culture that wants to tell you that it is a natural condition. It is not. It is all disease, all death, all suffering is a result of putting energies into your system that don't belong there. And sooner or later, you're going to finally say to yourself, you know, I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people, and I blamed all 42 different people. But it just occurred to me that here I am. I'm the only one that was there every time. Maybe this is about me. And when I learn that this is about me, then I get to take that energy, that frequency that's in the process of causing disease and death in me, and I get to forgive it. Now, forgiving it doesn't mean letting it off the hook, as the Greeks would tell you. There is no forgiveness in letting yourself or somebody else off the hook. Forgiveness is about how you go inside yourself and you remove the hostility and fear that comes forward. We just had a fun little interaction just 5 minutes ago. There's a burn barrel that we're, you know, taking old wood and burnable trash. We're pretty responsible here. We recycle what we can recycle. We trash very little, and we compost what we can compost. But it was interesting. Someone had pieces a lot on the ground, and I happened to come over and picked up the plastic pipe and said, "Hey, who's throwing the plastic pipe in the burn barrel?" And everybody said, no, not me, no, nobody here. It's like, well, you know, I started this fire 3 hours ago. There was no plastic pipe. So I guess somebody from space came in. And one of the, it was just so perfect because one of the people, you know, what's coming up for me is, you know, when we were kids and in school and somebody did something and then everybody got chastised, you know, I feel like I'm being chastised, like I'm being, you know, being punished for this. And it's like, okay, so notice there's no punishment in the space. There's just a question. But to just really be able to own, when somebody has feelings and thoughts come up. And of course, when you say, actually the word wasn't chastised. I don't remember just what it was, but it was the same basic idea. Say, okay, so you can't feel chastised. You can think you've been chastised, and when you think you've been chastised, what do you feel? Oh, I feel like anger. Oh, okay. And what's the anger covering up? Well, the anger is covering up the guilt because, oh, my thought is that I'm to blame, and I didn't have anything to do with it, but here's my blame stuff over a question about who put the plastic in the burn barrel. You know, it's just there's so many opportunities for us to learn forgiveness and to learn to remove the hostility and fear-based thinking that literally causes death. And that ties right into our lesson today. Our lesson is 163 in Course in Miracles. And the lesson says, there is no death. Now, of course, that's a ridiculous thing to say when you see people dying all the time. But the real question is that thing called death a necessity, or is it some created? Now, my background's in the world of energy and physics. And here's what I know from a physics perspective. Energy is eternal. Here's what else I know from a physics perspective. There's nothing but energy. If there's nothing but energy, then everything must be eternal, if energy's eternal. If everything is energy, then we must be energy, then we must be eternal. If we're not eternal, why not? Because we've put energies into the system that don't belong in the system. And when you put frequency, you see that the energy system itself is eternal. You can change the form of its expression by putting energies in that don't belong. The word is that describes putting an energy into a system that doesn't belong. The word from the ancient Aramaic, guess what it is? The word is sin. And sin hasn't got anything to do with guilt and fault and blame and what you did and all the garbage that people have put on it. Sin in Aramaic is simply an archery term. When you fire at the bullseye and you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper yells, sin, you're off the mark. It was originally meant to be positive feedback, as in, take another shot. So when they said in the ancient scriptures, the wages of sin is death, that wasn't some kind of theological threat. I can remember being a kid, and the way it was explained to me, at least the way I understood it, maybe it wasn't explained to me this way, but my perceptual construct around it was, God's going to get me for my sins. And nothing could be further from the truth. If you put an energy into the system that doesn't belong in the system, and begins to deteriorate and fall apart. And that's what we call death. But it's a creative state. It's not a natural state. Now, you say, but wait a minute, everywhere on the planet that we look, billions of people are dying. Well, then billions of people have bought into sin. Billions of people have bought into energies that don't belong within their structures, and they're destroying themselves. And, you know, it's okay to do that. That doesn't mean somebody's guilty or bad or wrong for doing it. It's just what people have been doing for a long time on the planet. We're here to provide another possibility, another option. Gee, I could forgive every energy in me that doesn't belong in me and ultimately be freed from that energy and therefore be freed from the deterioration that accompanies that energy. Now, you go back and you listen to Yeshua in the book of Revelations and you hear him say, to he that overcomes. Now, structured in your genes and mine to die. It's already in there. You know, everybody in your bloodline and mine that's over 120 is already dead. So we know it's structured in there. The invitation of this work is, are you willing to go to the depth? Are you willing to develop the skills and the ability to forgive everything in you? And everything from your bloodline that could possibly cause death. Are you willing to open that up, bring it forward, and overcome its propensity? Pardon me, I shouldn't say that. Overcome your propensity to kill yourself with energies that don't belong. And if you're willing to do that, then you will overcome. So let's listen in Revelation. Let's listen to this man's words and see if he knew what he was talking about. He that overcomes, he will not taste of the second death. The first death is when we lose awareness of who we are as spiritual beings, will not taste the second death. He will become a pillar. Now, what is a pillar but a fixture in the temple? What is the temple but your body, your so-called body? He will become a fixture in the temple of my God. And shall go out no more. Now, that's not a religious idea. Shall go out no more. What does that mean? It means you're going to stop killing yourself. It means you're going to get rid of your diseases. You're going to free yourself from all disease energy. What does that mean? That means you have to face. You have to allow to surface every rage, every fear, every guilt, every terror, every trauma of the generations and forgive it. And as you do, you'll become free of that energy. And that's the whole bottom line of this work. The lesson from the Course is lesson 163, there is no death. The Son of the Creator is free. If you choose to do the work that it takes, and that is the work of forgiveness, the work of removal of energies that don't belong, then you're going to be free of it. That's all. It's like how it works. So that's what we're here to create. That's what we're here to understand. And that's what we're here to share with you and support you in being empowered to do the work that is required to do what needs to be done. And the most important work you can do is to forgive everything in you that is based in hostility or fear. The best way to go about that? Well, if you want to access the technology for doing that, there are a couple of ways to do it. If you have an Android or an iPhone, you can go to the phone store. And you can type in the words Heartland Aramaic Mission, and that will give you a free app, totally private app, that you can do the forgiveness process on. There are links to instructions, and the whole thing is there for how to do the forgiveness process. You can go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and when you plug in there, the first two words at the top of the page are Start Here. Click the Start Here button. And that will walk you through everything you need to know about how to do forgiveness, how to remove everything based in your mind that doesn't belong in your mind. And as you do that, what will happen is you will see that suffering, pain, hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief. I was with someone who went to town with me today, and we were driving down the road, and a phone call came in, and it was an incorrect number. And so I thanked the guy for calling and said, "Nice to meet you, and by the way, have a great day. Bye." And the person who was with me was like, "Wow, that's, you know, when people call me and it's a wrong number, especially if they call me more than once, I get kind of frustrated and angry." It's like, so notice that if frustration and anger comes up in you, it's because you have a goal. Gee, I want only people to call me on my phone that should be calling me. And if somebody else calls, they've interrupted my day. And when somebody interrupts me, gee, I have hostility. Well, how about if you just change the whole scenario, and every time somebody calls you that's a mistake, you get an opportunity to make a new friend and connect with somebody maybe on the other side of the world. And maybe the person that calls you would be miserable and angry, and you can sow the frequency of love and appreciation and thanks for the call, and it's nice to meet you, into their day. I remember years ago I had someone who made an incorrect call, and probably for 2 years after that, every 6 months or so, that person would call me or I'd call them and just say, "Hey, how you doing? You know, it was nice to connect with you." Never did meet them in person, but, you know, what our minds do with frustrated goals. And here's a big key, is that when people aren't fulfilling your goals, they will show you what's in your mind. Now, your mind will make it up that they're showing you what they did. No. Goals drive internal processes, and internal processes only. If your internal processes show up with any form of hostility or fear, then your internal processes contain hostility or fear. It's got nothing to do with the person who made the phone call. You know, I've heard people say, "Oh, you know, they make me so mad when somebody calls a wrong number." It's like, well, what you just told me is that you have infantile goals, and when somebody frustrates one of them, you have anger in that file in your mind. What if you cleaned it out and somebody could call you a dozen times and you could say, somebody must really want to connect with somebody. Hey, how you doing? Anyway, that's what we're here to learn. That's what we're here to teach. If we can support you with the forgiveness process, that's our goal for being here. And so, Jeannie, anything to share with us today? Anything on your mind? Anything happening in the chat room or anybody in the phone queue with a hand up?
Well, it's really weird because as you were talking, I was thinking of something that's like, oh, when he quits talking, I'm going to share this. And now that you've asked me, I can't think of what it was.
I know how that goes.
But it was like, oh, I'm going to share this as soon as he quits talking. I should have made myself a note.
It'll probably come up 10 seconds after you introduce the next caller.
Right. And as of right now, we do have a caller. We have Kathy and George is in the chat room with me. Hey, George, from across the ocean. Welcome.
Hey, young man, young lady. Good to hear from you, or good to have you playing with us here long distance.
Absolutely. And our caller's area code 610. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, it's Susan in Pennsylvania. Haven't talked to you in a long time.
Oh, you've been on my mind.
Oh,
I actually have you in my dial queue. I was going to call you this morning and just say hello.
Oh, my goodness. That's so nice. We've had a little breakthrough. That's why I'm calling as myself. I hope it's safe enough to do that. I have several questions,
cool.
But I did want to report on Lukey. He had his first day at work yesterday at a camp for kids and had a wonderful time and met some kids his age and was very excited. Came home, had a calculus meeting tutorial with a wonderful teacher who's catching him up on his calculus so he can have a leg up at college. And his mother wrote him an email this morning saying, "We're on our way home from Italy and I love you so much." And it was just a clean, clear, little loving note. And he was so happy.
Sweet.
So it is so sweet. We're on the mend. And he has been practicing the tools. He's been saying, I don't know if my dad will ever change anything, but my attitude toward my dad can change. And I'm just going to hold him in my mind and love him. And he has had tremendous lapses in this. He gets very angry. He tells the stories over again and over again about bad things that happened. And that was one of my questions before this all started turning upwards. I wanted to say, what if this trauma is ongoing? And it is a matter of your own response to it. But what if the trauma is ongoing? It just takes a tremendous amount of use of tools, mental discipline, grace, all kinds of things to be all right when you're still right in the middle of the war. I'd just love to have you comment
Absolutely.
On that, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, there was actually a cute post on Facebook a couple of weeks ago that I reposted, and it had a person going to the doctor and asking the doctor what they should do, and the doctor said, well, you need to apply love to that situation. And then, you know, there's a time lapse and they're back at the doctor and says, well, what happens if the situation doesn't change? And the doctor said, well, you just apply more love.
Mm-hmm.
You keep doing your
That's
work.
That's so good.
And you know, there's a great teaching opportunity for Luke here in what you just shared. And so my offering would be that notice that Luke thinks he's happy because mom wrote him and things are cool with her. It would be a wonderful space because there's not the emotion when you're looking at negative codependence. This would be what you might call a case of a more positive codependence. But to point out to him, Luke, you're not happy because your mom wrote you a nice note and told you how much she loved you. You're happy because there's happiness inside of you. That was your trigger. And to let him know that, you know, whenever I think something outside of me is causing something to happen inside of me, the good, the bad, or the ugly, I'm in codependence. And so it can be a positive lesson for him to go, oh, okay, so, oh, this is happiness I can choose with or without the stimulus of mom or dad or anybody else approving of me. I can choose this state. And so that might be a step forward.
That's
for
wonderful.
Him. In learning the codependence aspect of things and learning to be responsible for his own happiness and stop blaming mom or dad when he's happy or stop blaming mom or dad when he's sad. Because it's all inside
out. Oh, that's
up.
So good. I wrote it down. Thank you.
Sweet.
That's great. I have another question. He was brought up, his mother's an Episcopal priest, and she was brought up actually when she was a toddler. Tim and I, my husband and I, were studying with some swamis in New York, Hinduism, because we had both had a very bad experience in the Christian church. Me with a fundamentalist sect, and my husband, anyway, we don't need to go into that. But in any case, we were studying with these swamis, and they were very universalistic. They considered Jesus Christ to be the greatest of the incarnations, but that there might be others. And Luke has been studying and doing Zen. That's another amazing thing. He found himself a Zendo about a half an hour away from here, and he goes there on Sundays and sits with the other people in there and is learning how to meditate. And he kept saying, my dad is really very rigid about Christianity and says, if you don't follow Jesus Christ, you're going to go to hell. And he gets very frightened and talks to me about that and says, do you think it's bad that I'm doing Zen? And I said, I'm sure Jesus is a Buddha. I mean, I don't think there's probably any difference. The Christ is universal, and I tell him what I think and what I know. But he has this very deep, almost PTSD kind of fear about maybe I'm really screwing it now, or screwing up my life and doing the wrong thing. And do you think Jesus is mad? And I'd love to hear you say something about that, too.
Well, my take on that would be that, you know, the father in this situation really doesn't want people to follow Christ. The father thinks that you go to hell if you don't follow his understanding of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's interesting that I think at last count there were 2,000 sects of so-called Christianity. I doubt that any one of them is actually Christian. I doubt that any one of them is actually following what Christ taught. And, of course, you know, so many people are born into this church or that church or that church. I mean, 32,000 sects. And mine just happens to be the only one that's right. And if you aren't following this one, then you are in deep doo-doo.
Right,
you know,
that's the way
that's
it is.
All just human. That's all just non-human folly. That's all just non-human garbage. People with hostility or fear. If you, you know, if you don't approve of my practice of religion, then you frustrated one of my infantile goals, and now you become the object of my wrath. And therefore, if you're the object of my wrath, then you must also be the object of Jesus's wrath and God's wrath. And that means you're going to hell. And that's just, you know, total silliness. It's just the silliness of the non-being mind. That's all.
Okay.
And, you know, if you can make it up that you've got the exclusive on the only gateway to a certain place, even though the guy that people proclaim was their gateway to that certain place said, if somebody tells you the kingdom of heaven is over there or over there or over there, believe them not, for it is within you. It is here and now. And those words in English actually mean the community of love. It's here. It's with us right now. And we can live there. It's not a place. You know, I hear so many people in these silly sects, and they are silly, that talk about, well, do you know if when you die, you're going to heaven? Hey, baby, if you're not in heaven now, you ain't going there when you die. That's not going to change anything. If you aren't living in the community of love today, you ain't going to heaven. That's just,
ooh,
you know,
that's
just silly Christianity, silly pseudo-Christianity. The man said we had to live as the presence of love, and those who do not have love, who are not functioning as human beings, aren't, you know, they're not following what he said at all. And, you know, for me, the key tool is, if I can clear out, if I can forgive the hostility and fear, the only thing left is going to be to stand as a space of love. And of course, when we look at the fact that these are deep, deep, deep generational issues, takes a little time. Not going to be done tomorrow. Not going to be done next year. Not going to be done 10 years from now or 20 or 30. But I keep stepping closer in the journey to living as the presence of love, whatever happens.
So good. I have another question. I can imagine what
question.
The answer. Thank you. I'm glad you like them because I've been writing them down. And I have an ongoing argument with a couple that we are very close to up in New Haven where we used to live. And both of them do not think that gay marriage is the right thing to do because it's not biblically based. And I am not a scholar. I've read the Bible, but I'm not a theologian or anything, and I can't argue with them. And I would love to have your take on that. I don't know why there's that preoccupation. It's not just with them. It's across the board. There seems to be an awful lot of preoccupation with who's with whom and what they're doing with them. And I don't think it's really anybody's business. And I don't remember Jesus ever commenting, although he did say to the woman who committed adultery, go and sin no more. And I'm not sure where that all fits in the picture. Comments would be great on that one, too.
Well, I think that if you are engaging in energies that are offensive to the integrity of your energy field, you're in sin. And I suspect this woman was not being very respectful of herself. So he was saying, you know, stop doing it. You know, just like give it up, lady. You don't need to be doing that. To me, the whole gay marriage thing is an oxymoron. You know, it's interesting. Vladimir Lenin, man responsible for more deaths on the planet than probably anybody in history, says if you want to destroy a culture, change the meaning of its words. To me, the problem with gay marriage is that marriage has a meaning. When we change the meaning of words, we destroy people's ability to think around that issue. You know, it's not, as you said, it's not my business what gays do or don't do, or, you know, whatever they're engaged in isn't my business. I do have an objection to calling what they do marriage because that's not what the word means. It'll become that. We'll change the meaning of it. And, you know, that's the way the culture's going. But I think that we're polluting taking a relationship that produces children and a family and making something that's different than that into marriage. I think that's a mistake. But, you know, people make mistakes and do what you want to do. But other than that, I don't think it's my business. Now, Does the sexual energy of a male belong in another male? Does the sexual energy of a female belong in another female? I'd invite people to really think about that. You know, there's a principle in design that says function follows form.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell what the function of a form is by the form itself. So I would question people as to whether that energy is really an appropriate energy. But again, not really my business what people do with it. My business is to be the state space of connectedness.
There are, what is the original, are you still there? I feel as if I've lost a connection.
Michael, you dropped just about mid-sentence there. He's going to dial back in. Hang on just a second, Susan.
Okay. Thank you. I know, but, you can sort of feel the airwave disappear or something.
Yeah, it just dropped. We don't have the best cell signal here. I would like to add a part to that while we're waiting for him to call back in. I was raised very strict, fundamental Southern Baptist. And so lesbianism, homosexuality, all of that was like taboo. And there was, we did some workshops down in Key West 1 year. And this was early in our relationship and everything. And this one gentleman who kind of hosted us, it was like, you know, is he or is he not? I wasn't sure. You know, he wasn't flamboyant or anything. But, you know, there was just something that I thought, well, he might be, you know, homosexual. But anyway, we were in his space basically for a couple of weeks. We did workshops and everything. And we did still point breathing one day. And, you know, we always breathe half the group and then take an intermission and then breathe the other half. And so when we were taking an intermission for lunch, I asked him if I could speak to him privately. And we went over and sat on a couch. And I told him, you know, I had just this huge aha because, you know, while I don't agree with his lifestyle, and he was gay, I loved him. I mean, he was an awesome person. And I just shared with him, you know, how I was raised and that, you know, I didn't believe in it. And, you know, and the way that I had, my perception had changed in those 2 weeks being with him. I still didn't agree with his lifestyle, but I wanted him to know that I really felt love towards him. And he hugged me, and it was like, you know, thank you for sharing that. And it was an awesome moment for me because it was like, this is what Jesus meant when he said to love one another, but it didn't mean that we had to approve of what they were doing. You know, just like he reached out to that prostitute and, you know, healed her and told her to go and sin no more. You know, so it was like he didn't judge her. He healed her and he expressed love towards her, but he didn't agree with what she was doing. And then the big shocker of that story is when I got back to Tennessee and I shared that in an email to family, friends, preachers, you know, a lot of people, that it was just a big aha for me and that I realized that's what Jesus meant when he said that we were to love. And my pastor actually wrote back to me and said he hoped that God brought me down.
Whoa.
And it was just like, all right, now who's really loving here, you know?
Oh, boy, that's harsh.
So I just wanted to throw that in, that it, to me, even though I don't agree with that lifestyle, I have learned to love the person regardless of where they are or what they're doing and not pass the judgment on them. And Michael's back with us now.
Oh, good.
And, of course, to recognize that when we're talking about, we're talking in the vernacular about loving someone, we're talking about, can I bring the presence of my being love to the presence of this person? That's my job.
Mm-hmm.
Who they are, what they are, what they're doing ain't my business. Now, if someone is in a state of pain and turmoil and trauma and wants some support, is it my business to say, well, you might want to look at this energy or that? Sure it is. That's what I do. That's what my function is in the world. But because I say to somebody, well, you might want to really look at, you know, does that energy really belong in your body? Does that really work? I don't have to lay out a judgment to ask that question to know that function follows form, and maybe form isn't saying that's how it works best. But, you know, the thing is, for me to achieve direct total contact with of my being, whatever everybody else is doing. And when we get 7.5 billion people on the planet doing that, all of this stuff that so many people are arguing and struggling and fighting over is just going to disappear.
Yeah, that's good. Michael, you said early on that gay marriage was an oxymoron. I guess I don't really understand what marriage is. I mean, I'm married. We just had our 50th wedding anniversary, in fact.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I know. It's just absolutely astounding.
It's pretty
Thank
weird
you.
To say I remember a half a century ago when, isn't it?
Yeah, weird. So tell me about the oxymoron. Why is it an oxymoron?
Well, you know, Plato said, let me define the words and I'll end the argument.
Okay, right.
If you define marriage, now people say, well, but there are 100 different definitions. Well, you could have 100 or 1,000 different definitions. But mm-hmm. for me, in this culture, if we were to define marriage, it would be the union of a man and a woman that has the potential to produce children and creates a unit called a family. That
yeah.
would be my definition of the word marriage.
Is
so
that biblical?
When, say again?
Is that biblical?
I don't know whether that's biblical or not. I've never looked to see
yeah.
how biblical or unbiblical it might be.
Yeah,
but
that's my friend's argument.
Yeah, to me, generally in this culture, that would be the definition of marriage. Now, I think if we're going to do that as a definition, if we could agree on that as a definition, then it would be
mm-hmm.
polluting that word, or it would be falling right in line with Vladimir Lenin, who says, destroy the meaning of words, change the meaning of words, destroy the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, for me, if people who are of a gay bent want to create relationship, you know, folks, make up your own word. Go for it.
Yeah.
You want to call it whatever you want to call it. Make it up, call it, and do it. If you want a domestic partnership or whatever it is. But to me, it's please, let's not pollute that word.
Okay, I can understand
because
that.
Because it has a meaning,
a
generally accepted meaning. And my kids, if they grow up and that meaning has been polluted, then they can't know the meaning of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And now the ability of the mind to think rationally about a particular subject is destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Now you could say, well, we could go ahead and we could start polluting the meaning of everything. Well, we have. We've polluted the meaning of the word forgiveness. And you notice, I think this is the single most destructive thing in human history. The virus removal tool of forgiveness, the ability to remove hostility or fear from the human energy system, was given in this culture at least 2,000 years ago. Its meaning was polluted. They changed the meaning to be, I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me.
Right.
I think the reason, like, for instance, I opened my email last night and there happened to be, you know, I've got a news feed. And the first thing that came up in my email when I opened it, this was in class last night, and I read it to everybody. And the words were, T's philosophy is, we're America, bitch. And it was
right.
like, What are we doing? What the reason why we've got such a polluted mindset in the world today, and
mm-hmm.
we've murdered hundreds of thousands of people in the last 75 or 100 years beyond comprehension is
mm-hmm.
because the word forgiveness was polluted. And people don't
mm-hmm.
know there's a virus removal tool that they can remove, be responsible for, and remove hostility and fear. And therefore, we've got this insanity happening in the world. Everywhere that the meaning of words has been polluted, you know, love has been polluted. Love is a state of being. If I make it something that I do, then I go out looking for somebody to love me, and I forget that it's my responsibility to be the space of love. That word has been polluted. You know, actually, the video Aramaicisms Dale Allen Hoffman, I spend 4 hours looking at the Aramaic definitions of words and working to restore an understanding of what the original meanings of that word is. And the reason why Vladimir Lenin is, I mean, it's a genius piece of information to be able to spread to those who would destroy. It's genius to be able to say, just pollute the meaning of their words and you can destroy their culture, because culture among humans is transferred through words. If we destroy the meanings of the words, we just blew away the culture. That's why we don't have a Christian culture left. That's why we've got people who are standing strong for a man who admits that he does his best to rape women. They're standing strong for a man who has allowed coal ash to be poured down the stream into children's homes and water supplies. I mean, on and on and on, because we've polluted the meanings of the words. And so, you know, one of the whole focal points of Laws of Living is to get back to original solid meanings of words so that we can reason together agreeably, because we have a common definition for words and we can carry forward a culture that's based in love. And the only way to create the kingdom of heaven on earth, and again, those words in Aramaic mean the community of love, is to understand what community is and to understand that we are love, and to create a community where we join as that presence of love. And that's what we're working to do through this radio show, through everything that we do. And of course, in doing that, we get to do every piece of work that we need to do individually and collectively to keep cleaning up our own minds, because we've all been so polluted through the generations. And, you know, as far as I can tell, it's probably been close to 2,000 years since forgiveness as a virus removal tool was in common use on the planet, maybe 1800 years. And look at what's going on. You know, look around the globe. You know, you look at the reports, you know, just the last few days, reports have been coming out that in some states in the United States, suicide is up 38-45%.
Pennsylvania is one of them.
In 20 years, you know, I mean, it's crazy. And there's a single reason for that. People do not have a proper definition of the word forgiveness. Therefore, they have no idea how to forgive. Therefore, the hostility and fear-based mind accumulates from generation to generation to generation and destroys us. One word, destroyed.
That's scary.
And I've actually had the conversation about the idea of marriage and gay with some friends who are gay. When they see it from that perspective, they go, yeah, why don't we just make up? No, we don't want to destroy anybody. These are good people. We don't want to destroy anybody.
Yeah.
But we never thought, we never understood that. We didn't know that. Yeah,
right.
What we really want are just the same quote-unquote rights as people who are quote-unquote married, but we're not looking to pollute that or destroy it. And I've had several people that I've talked to about it over the years have gone, yeah, that makes perfect sense. But
yeah, that does make sense. I have one question within that, though. My friends up north say that they certainly think that partnerships, loving partnerships that have commitments, vows and so forth, would be fine if you don't call it marriage, but they have to be celibate. And I'm thinking, well, there's where I get off the boat. I can understand having a whole new name, but I don't think we have any right to get into other people's bedrooms. And I also know for myself, and this is getting very personal, I have absolutely no influence over what attracts me physically. I mean, if I could manipulate my fantasies, I probably would. And people are quirky and they all have different things. How much control do we have over that? And why do we have the right to ask gay people to have complete control over that and not indulge in ways that straight people do? Now, boy, I know that's getting pretty dicey on a radio show.
No, it's not dicey at all. It's just silly. You know, it's like, what business is it? Oh, yeah, as long as we're celibate. I mean, you know, it's all about projection. It's all about projection. And somebody who hasn't resolved their own sexuality is going to try to control the sexuality of others.
Cool, I like that. Michael, wait till I write that down.
When somebody, And when somebody tries to control a drive that's that powerful, you just got yourself in a lot of deep trouble.
Oh, I love it. I wish I had this. Well, I'll have to listen to the archive. All right. That's great. That's so helpful. Wonderful.
And, you know, I bring this subject up. I talk a little bit about it in my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And how this so-called Christian culture has us believing an oxymoron. Sex is dirty. Save it for the one you love. I mean,
right.
You know, think about that. It's crazy. I mean, it's just the whole thing. It's just such an insane mindset.
Yeah.
Do you think anybody who has that belief, which is pretty much a basic, I think you call so-called Christian belief in many, many circles today, that mind could ever figure out their own sexuality, let alone have any say or any business in somebody else's sexuality? Come on, it's silly on its face. You know? But there's lots of
right.
silliness in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in the end result, you know, everybody wants to figure it out, and my input is stop trying to figure it out, forgive it. Because when you forgive mm-hmm. it, you'll get rid of the viruses of hostility and fear. You'll arrive at living as the active presence of love. And then, it's like, as the scriptures talk about, you know, the mind of man is not yet conceived of what lies in store. What it could be like if 7.5 billion people woke up tomorrow morning functioning as human beings, functioning as the active presence of love. The judgment, the hostility, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the pain, the insanity, the abuse. If it were gone tomorrow, what would it look like?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to know what that is as we each individually do our work. And as we individually do our work, there'll come a point of critical mass where there will be a mass shift and the whole game is going to change.
Oh, I love it.
And who
oh,
knows
boy.
What it's going to look like when it changes. But it's not going to look anything like this.
Mm. How bad does it have to get, Michael, before it starts turning upward?
Well, you know, everybody does what everybody's got to do. I think that there is a very strong movement afoot of people who are about doing their work. You know, if I look at the receptivity today compared to starting doing this work 50 years ago, you know, I mean, in a lot of communities, 40, 50, you know, 30 years ago, I had people, you know, forming crosses with their fingers, backing away from this guy who's talking about what we're talking about. Today,
oh.
I mean, I go to a medical conference and I have medical doctors saying, say that, tell me more about that. What was that you said? How does that work?
Mm-hmm.
You mean the liver's an energy system? You mean if I put hate and fear in the liver is going to break down. It's not going to work. That it's not a physical organ. It's not about the physicalness of it. It's about the disintegrative energies in it. Wow, that makes sense. Who? How do I get to that understanding? And, you know, people have to hang out for a while to shift the brain cells and build the brain cells to
right.
comprehend that there's a different game going
right.
on here. And so we just do, you know, with the resources we have, you know, on an ongoing basis, what project do we have? What can we do to do the next project to take this and make it available to a wider audience, to a larger group of people until we finally get it to where it's available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet? And that's what we're committed to.
Mm. I know, and it's so good.
It's fun. It's fun. Sometimes I just am overwhelmed with gratitude at
And you're
wow.
right there
what
now
did
in
I
Heartland.
Do?
You're doing that thing. And Roma's about to appear. I think she's going to come soon. We've been talking about the fact that she's coming to Heartland at some point.
Cool. Yeah, she's here. She'll be arriving on Saturday.
Oh, great. Okay.
So, yeah, cool.
Hmm.
Yeah, we're rocking. We've got an awesome group of people. Just some of the
it's
sweetest
wonderful.
Energy moving and some of the most intense energy moving. For people, as the stuff, you know, the more people
yeah.
connect and the stronger the field of love gets, the more that which mm-hmm. is unlike love has to surface. And so there's process happening too. So, you know, I've thought about making a bumper
right.
sticker that says process happens. It would go along with that other bumper sticker that you've seen on cars.
Right, right. I have a good bumper sticker too. It's very benign though.
What's
it say? I flossed. I floss at red lights.
Cool. Make use of the time.
Yeah, right. Michael, can I ask you one more question?
You could ask me 10 more questions.
Okay. In Miracles Manual, it says that the end of a relationship is not an accident because the two have reached the limit of their current ability to learn from each other, and they have been together for the sake of their learning. So I have a friend who, after 10 years of marriage and one child, decided to leave her husband because she said, we're finished with each other. And I found that confusing and disturbing, and I know that's my garbage, but I would love to hear what you have to say about that sentence and the end of relationships.
Well, my offer would be that, first of all, you know, that certainly could never cause you confusion. But if there's confusion in your mind, it might surface, and that would be an opportunity for healing. And, you know, I don't believe in that, you know, well, we're just finished with each other and that's it. I think that's called my leaving issue is up. And I'm not willing to deal with what's going on inside of me that has me wanting to leave. And so I am going to leave and not deal with it. And so people who do that end up spending their whole lives leaving. And if I face and forgive leaving in me, and I function as a human being, and I'm actually responsible for my own happiness, my own well-being, my own joy, and I have this person that I'm playing with and creating life with, I have an awesome opportunity to keep opening and creating in the world out of a space of connected sweetness. If I'm sweetness, if I'm not, then I might blame my partner and say, well, you know, I'm finished with her because that's her fault that I'm feeling. And, you know, it's just more of the leaving issue, more of, oh, the next depth of work that I need to do is in my face, and I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So that would be my take.
Yeah, this is what was said in the Course in Miracles in the teacher's manual, and I just thought it was mind-blowing. But maybe they weren't talking about marriages. Maybe they were just talking about teacher and student relationships that reach a certain potential or something. Not sure.
Works for me.
Okay, good. Thank you so much for all this good stuff.
Hey, delighted to be on the team and delighted to have you on ours. Keep asking questions. Your questions are awesome.
Thanks, Michael. Your answers are awesome.
Okay, young lady. Blessings.
Thank
Tell
you.
Luke we said
Thank
hello and
too.
Send a hug.
Okay, I will. Thanks.
Okay. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. We do have another caller. We're down to 6 minutes. All right. Area code 775. You're on the air. Who do we have?
It's Laura again from Nevada, and I'll make it snappy. I had a conversation with my dad about, I don't know, 55 years ago, and I said, Daddy, what do you think happens to the soul when we die? Does it just dissolve or what? And he says you cannot destroy energy. And then we got into the subject of infinite. Well, his background was physics and aeronautical engineering. So, but the thing is, we can destroy energy. Like, let's say you turn on the stove and you turn it off, the heat just dissipates. It doesn't.
But you haven't destroyed
the same
anything.
Form. I'm sorry.
You haven't destroyed anything. The word dissipates means it moved into another space. It has nothing to do with its destruction. It is still energy.
So do you believe
you can take heat and turn it into steam and drive a turbine, and now all of a sudden the car is running down the road because you had heat, but the heat hasn't been destroyed. It's just been changed into another form. My offering is that your physiology is a form of energy. And if you only put energies into it that support its liveliness and its well-being, then it has to carry on. If you put energies into it that don't belong to it, then it will start to dissipate. It will start to change into other forms and move into other arenas, and there will not be enough left to sustain it in its current state.
Gotcha. So do you believe in the integrity of the soul after physical death then?
I believe that we are eternal beings designed for
okay.
eternal life, and that we are eternal. Yes, absolutely.
As souls.
Yes, as a being.
With a sense
you
of
know,
self?
If I go back and hold the newborn child, and I recognize
mm-hmm.
that's who I am, that newbornness is eternal.
Do we
that
have a sense
of
self in these souls?
I believe that, you know, my experience is that there is a self that's a capital S self that is the soul or the being. And then
mm-hmm.
there's a self that develops in the mind as a result of the assault energies based in those energies that belong in the system. And we form a lowercase self that isn't who we are. But most people think that is who they are, the hostility and fear-based self. You go back to Yeshua and he says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. If I'm identified
right.
with an hostility and fear-based self, then I, as the truth of who I am not in expression or in awareness. I think I'm this hostility or fear-based self that has to fight and struggle and do all the stuff that it does. That
mm-hmm.
self has to go. And it's forgiveness that allows the dissolution of that self. And upon the dissolution of that self, the being, love that we are, gets to incarnate in our physiology. Now physiology is filled with bliss and ecstasy, and we get to live as human beings.
That answered that question. I totally agree with you about the insidiousness of redefining words, by the way, to change culture.
Oh, yeah.
It happens
right.
all
I mean,
the time.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. That's
it
why
is, but anyway, thank you for your wonderful answers. I'm sorry?
I say that's why one of the key things in this work is to establish correct meanings of words and to sustain those meanings.
Right. I got it. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you for your call and your question.
Can I add just one thing?
Oh, please do, sweetheart.
Okay, I'm not sure if this will help or not, but it popped in my mind. You know, in the ancient scriptures, it talks about when Yeshua met with Moses and Elijah on top of the mountain, and the disciples
uh-huh.
recognized him. Now, how they recognized him, I don't know, because they didn't have photographs back then, but
mm-hmm.
they recognized him, and Moses and Elijah both had been gone for years, and
right.
Yeshua or Jesus was still in his physical body, but they were seen on the same plane having a conversation. And so, yes, I think, you know, the being recognized afterwards, I think those senses are still there. And, I mean, they talked, they had a conversation, so they could still hear and speak. And you know, even after Yeshua resurrected, he had a meal with the disciples, so he was still eating.
Right.
You know, so
mm-hmm.
I think that all of that conscious awareness, it's on a higher plane, but I think it's still there.
Yeah, I think so, too. I just wanted to see what you all thought. Okay, thank you so much.
We want to remind people that forgiving has nothing to do with, you never want to forgive anybody for anything, that, you know, I forgive what's going on inside of me to remove the energy that destroys my integrity, and that's the whole forgiveness process. And that's what
right.
helps me to maintain the integrity of who I am as a human being.
That's why I do worksheets.
All right. Well, you have a blessed day. We're down to the last few seconds. Everybody, best year yet
okay.
of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org That's www.whyagain.com.